The Buckeye Extra podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company, and Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers. Game day tastes better with Raising Cane's tailgates full of 24-hour marinated and battered chicken fingers.
Now, the Buckeye Extra podcast with Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz, and Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch.
Hello, loyal listeners, friends of the podcast, admirers. We have a special guest this week. It's week three. Ohio State plays at Indiana. We have a beat writer, covers Indiana. He'll break down all the action, give you the perspective on the Hoosiers, their quarterback situation, which may be in flux. A little chat about kind of the state of IU as a whole. They're in year three under Tom Allen, who replaced Kevin Wilson, who's on the staff at Ohio State. Talked a little bit about kind of the divisional structure in the Big Ten. That was obviously kind of a big talking point back in Big Ten media days, and IU's kind of on the wrong side of that coin there in the loaded Big Ten East, while their rivals Purdue are just far enough west in the state of Indiana to be in the Big Ten West, and rather than play Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State every year, they get locked into playing the likes of Illinois and Minnesota and Northwestern and Wisconsin. So a little easier sledding for Purdue compared to IU. So we talked a little bit about that, kind of what IU needs to do to maybe challenge Ohio State. So I thought a lot of good stuff in the interview from Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. I think you'll enjoy what he has to say. If you want to keep following the rest of us, you can log on to BuckeyeExtra.com, read my colleague Bill Rabinowitz. This is Joey Kaufman. You can read my colleague as well, Rob Aller, our columnist. We'll have lots of stories up there kind of throughout this week and into the weekend, previewing the game. But before we get into more IU talk, Ohio State talk, let's hear a word from our sponsor. When Rosati Windows arrives at an in-home consultation, we always tell our customer that a house can't talk to you, but it typically will give you signs that something isn't right. A home's windows are particularly communicative. Although they don't last forever, a high-quality, well-maintained window could last for many, many years, one such as a Rosati window. However, at some point, they may not be at their best. So listen carefully to what they are telling you, and you will know that it's time to have them replaced. Are there drafts? Are they damaged or warped? Do they stick when you close or open them? If you answer yes to any of these, then maybe time to call Rosati Windows for an in-home consultation. Learn more at RosatiWindows.com. Hello, everybody. We are joined. This is Thursday, September 12th. This is this week's, the latest episode of the Buckeye Extra Football Podcast, and we're joined by Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star to preview IU Hoosiers. Ohio State has its first road game of the season. It's Big Ten opener in Bloomington on Saturday afternoon. Zach is driving from Bloomington to Indianapolis somewhere on the highways. Zach, how are you this late morning?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is still morning technically. It's been a busy day, so I don't know if it sort of feels like it should be 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but I guess considering I still got to get up to the office and get a couple things done, it's better that it's not.
Well, maybe we'll start with the news of the day. Tom Allen, I guess, said that their starting quarterback, Michael Penix Jr., is a game-time decision. What do you guys know about his status, and I guess what kind of impact would that be if Indiana's down their starting quarterback?
Yeah, so I don't know if this is necessarily something Indiana particularly wanted to get out or not. Michael Penix, I guess, is going to be a game-time decision. He's Indiana's redshirt freshman quarterback, starting quarterback. He is going to be a game-time decision Saturday with some sort of injury. Tom Allen was, I would say, frankly, uncharacteristically vague on the details when we spoke to him here on Thursday. Penix, he said, did not suffer the – first of all, he would not – elaborate at all on the nature of the injury other than simply to say that he did not believe it was a long-term thing. He said that Penix did not necessarily suffer it during the Eastern Illinois game. I think, and I'd have to go back to the audio, but he described it sort of as something not feeling right. So, you know, was it an impact that sort of hit later on? I don't know. I mean, we really don't know. And therefore, we don't know if Michael Penix is going to play or not, but there is clearly some doubt over his status. I think, on the one hand, Indiana's probably got the best backup quarterback situation in the Big Ten because their backup quarterback was their starter last year, Peyton Ramsey, a very efficient, very accurate quarterback. On the other hand, you know, nobody else on this roster is as explosive as Michael Penix. I think it's probably fair to say nobody's as athletic in the open field as Michael Penix, and while Penix isn't exactly a dual threat quarterback, it's not like he's scrambling all the time. That is an element of his game that nobody else can quite match in terms of his speed and his explosiveness. And so you know, in a way, I think Michael Penix was probably named Indiana's starting quarterback sort of to win games like this, and that's probably a somewhat lazy way to say it, but I think it's more the point that Indiana's felt if it's going to be able to compete and maybe blow the roof off of, you know, the ceiling it has in the Big Ten East, it needs to be more explosive offensively. It needs more playmaking ability, obviously quarterback being probably the most important position for that. And the feeling was Michael Penix had that. He had that, just that level of explosiveness and, I don't want to say unpredictability, but the ability to really hurt a defense in a number of different ways that I don't think either of Indiana's other two QBs have. And so I think this is a little bit of a concern if he can't go on Saturday. Again, I think Indiana's in better hands than maybe anybody else in the conference would be with their backup. But, you know, you're still losing undeniably some physical tools that are very important for Michael Penix.
So I guess he was named the starter and over Peyton Ramsey because of his upside or quote-unquote ceiling and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, Tom Allen's quote I thought was actually very apt on it. He said it wasn't about what he thought Peyton couldn't do. It was what he thought Michael Penix could be. And his point was that it's, as you said, it's more about his upside and it's more about saying, I mean, listen, if you watch all three of those guys, they're all good quarterbacks. This is the deepest quarterbacks room Indiana's had in at least 6 or 7 years, probably longer than that, quite frankly. I mean, probably the deepest QB room Indiana's had since I've been aware of Indiana football, and that's been about 15 years going back to my time as a student at IU. But there's no denying that Penix has the strongest arm, the most arm talent, that he's got, you know, and just an obvious level of poise and confidence. And then there is that ability in the open field. Again, it's not something that Indiana uses a lot. It's not like they're running a whole bunch of design draws and read options and zone read stuff, but it is a weapon in his arsenal, essentially. And so it's much more about saying, like what Tom Allen said, that what Michael Penix could become, Indiana just doesn't get that kind of player very often, certainly at a position like quarterback. And if that's the case, then Indiana's sort of betting on him developing into that player long term.
If you look at their first couple games, obviously last week they win 52-0. They put up a good number of points against Ball State. Was that in large part due to Michael Penix? Was it other guys on offense stepping up? Was it, obviously Eastern Illinois is an FCS team and probably on the lower end of FCS competition. So I guess, what do you chalk up their early success in offense to?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Penix is a big part of it. I think he was third in the Big Ten in total offense in terms of, like, yards per game, run plus pass after two weeks. Opponents, probably a big part of it, too. That these are probably the two, you know, weakest opponents, at least on paper, Indiana's going to face this season. You know, I think maybe there's a little bit of an argument of Ball State versus UConn, just because Ball State's going to give you a little bit of that in-state, you know, flavor and maybe a little bit of fieriness there in week one. But I also just think that, you know, what I've said this week when people have asked, is Indiana through 2 weeks is everything Indiana said it would be through the offseason? More explosive offensively, deeper defensively, more athletic almost everywhere. You know, a lot of young guys starting to really develop into really, really good players, as opposed to just kind of promising talents like they, you know, the way that they sort of looked in high school and maybe in their first couple of years of college. You know, Indiana has a lot of second, third, fourth year players on the field a lot, but they're guys who played a lot for their age. And I think you're starting to see that shine through a little bit as well. But the competition being what it is, you know, that's a very, very good start. It's a very, very encouraging start. And if Michael Penix's injury isn't a long-term concern, whether he plays this weekend or not, I think you're still allowed to be encouraged by all of that. But you also acknowledge that the road steepens considerably this weekend, and really, obviously not everybody's Ohio State, but it doesn't quite let up anymore, because then you get UConn at home, and then comes the rest of Big Ten play anyway. So I think Indiana fans have every right to be encouraged. I think this is an intriguing team, but, you know, like I said, the challenges only grow from here.
This was a year, I think, as well, Tom Allen took over play calling for the defense. That's correct, right? I'm not off on that?
Yes, this is, so Tom Allen turned the defense over for the first time since he's been in Indiana, even including that year in D.C., obviously, to Kane Womack, who was Indiana's linebackers coach last year. Father Dave Womack is the guy that Indiana, that Tom Allen sort of adopted the 4-2-5 from. Dave Womack is a longtime defensive coordinator, and Tom and Kane worked together at Ole Miss for, I think, a couple of years before Kane went off to be a small school defensive coordinator. So there's a lot of familiarity there. It's not like the system has changed that much. But Allen basically said, you know, that last season, kind of midway through the season, he just realized he had too much on his plate. He was trying to carry too much, too many long days, too many short nights, and it just wasn't healthy for him. So he decided to turn it over.
What kind of effect do you think that's had?
You know, it's hard to say just yet. I think Indiana's kept things pretty vanilla on defense through the first couple weeks. I think there's a lot of things that have looked familiar. The ability to bring some creative pressures with linebackers and defensive backs, that was always something that Tom Allen liked. I mean, you know, Indiana doesn't necessarily have a defensive line packed with studs, but even in years when Allen has had some really reliable guys on that front four, he still liked bringing pressures from weird angles, you know, sort of delayed blitzes, blitz fakes, things like that. He's always liked using that within the framework of the system, and I think Kenny Womack has kind of stuck to that as well. I think that maybe if there's anything that's going to be a little bit different long-term, it's going to be how aggressive is Indiana willing to be maybe in games like this? Because if nothing else, and this may be about scheme, it may just be about personnel, and I think games like this, I'm talking about Ohio State, obviously. Indiana's deeper. I mean, Indiana's undeniably deeper on defense than it's been in, frankly, just about anybody's memory, maybe going back at least 25 years. And that's at the secondary level, that's at the linebacker level, that's maybe to a slightly lesser extent along the defensive line, just in the sense that I think Indiana's got more playmakers at linebacker and secondary than it does in the D-line. It'll rotate heavily on the D-line nonetheless. But the thing that it feels like the refrain we've kind of repeated over and over again when Indiana and Ohio State have played, or Indiana and Michigan have played, or Indiana and Penn State have played in recent seasons, especially in Bloomington, is we get to the end of the game and, you know, Ohio State, let's say, wins by somewhere between 21 and 26 points, or 16 and 26 points, and we all say, geez, the game seemed more competitive than that. That final score doesn't seem to reflect the way the game really played out. And it doesn't, but it does, because basically Indiana kept it close and kept it close, and then finally late in the fourth quarter, or maybe midway through the fourth quarter, Indiana finally ran out of gas. You know, its depth didn't hold up compared to what Ohio State had, and Ohio State was allowed to put its foot down on the pedal and score a couple of late touchdowns and build a comfortable margin of victory. I think that Indiana's got the potential to be a little bit more aggressive defensively because it's got more guys it can believe in and more guys it can count on that side of the ball. And I'm sure that as the season wears on, we're going to see some subtle differences in, you know, where does Kane Womack like to send pressure from? What does he like to do in odd downs? What does he like to do in third and long? You know, those sorts of different things. But I don't think that the fundamentals of the defense and really maybe even kind of your key bullet points within that defense have changed very much, because you're talking about two guys that learned that defense from the same person, that kind of grew up in that defense the same way, and I think very much have a lot of the same ideas about how that system should be run.
It's funny you bring up margin of victory. So this is my first year on the beat here at covering Ohio State, and pretty much the line of questioning a lot of the players have gotten at Ohio State since Saturday has been about Indiana always gives you guys a game and they're always tough. And then you look at the scores, and I think they won the last two games by like an average of 25 points or so. So when you look at the scoreboard, it doesn't feel like as if the games have been close, but I guess in the moment and in the third quarter, and there are times when it's maybe a single-digit game before kind of, I guess, the dam breaks at some point.
I think it's accurate. So I think that's where you get kind of that feeling like, oh, this score didn't feel like it was reflective of the way the game played out, and maybe it wasn't. In the sense that Indiana was probably more competitive over four quarters, what it's probably more reflective of, though, and I think Indiana's keenly aware of this when it goes into recruiting, when it goes into player development, is it's more reflective of the difference in quality between the two rosters. That, you know, when there are 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter, Ohio State starters are just a whole lot fresher than Indiana starters on both sides of the ball, because Indiana starters, let's say, have had to play 65 snaps. Ohio State starters have only had to play 40, because Ohio State's reserves are just at a higher quality, a higher athletic level, playmaking level, talent level, whatever. And so, as you said, I think that's probably a good metaphor. The dam eventually breaks where, you know, Indiana just hits a wall. Something just kind of zeroes out, and you get maybe an interception return for a touchdown. You get a big sack and a fumble that leads to a score. You know, a couple of years ago, I think one of the kind of backbreaking plays was a little bit of a Paris Campbell kind of, I mean, basically just like a 8-yard crossing route over the middle. But Indiana had finally rotated out T. Gray Scales, this All-American linebacker, because he played almost the entire game. And his backup was, I think, a redshirt freshman or a redshirt sophomore. Campbell came across that kid's face. He followed him, but he just couldn't stay with him because it's Paris Campbell. T. Gray Scales maybe could have, but T. Gray Scales needed a little bit of a break. And that one moment when Indiana doesn't have Scales on the field, Ohio State finds a way to key in on his backup, put a huge mismatch on him, and Campbell took that crossing route, turned up field, and it was, I forget the exact number, but I mean, it was a 50, 60 yard touchdown pass in the end. And so it's those little things that just kind of tell eventually the difference, not necessarily maybe in the performances on game day, but certainly in the overall kind of quality of depth on the rosters. And I think that something Indiana has really tried to attack in recruiting in the last few years is that depth, and is sort of maybe worrying less about trying to hit three or four home runs in a recruiting class and trying to hit instead of a lot of singles and doubles. And I'm kind of rambling here, but something that struck me about the recruiting class that Tom Allen's put together in the last couple seasons is it feels like the players that, when you look at ratings and rankings at the bottom of the recruiting class, are a demonstrable step up from where they were, you know, the previous 5 or 10 years. And so maybe it's not necessarily that you're getting the studs at the top end, but the guys that, as they develop into sophomores and juniors and seniors, that you would look at and say, oh, they just sort of filled the class out on signing day. They weren't headliners. They weren't exciting. They just helped us reach that number we needed to in terms of, you know, filling different positions out. Those guys, when they're juniors and seniors, are of a higher quality. And so that drop-off from your ones to your twos and even your twos to your threes isn't quite as pronounced. And that's what Indiana's hoping. And it's possible, maybe not Saturday, but I think it's possible Indiana picks up one of these wins this season along the way somewhere, because that depth is starting to tell. You know, those young players are starting to develop.
Do you have any sense on that this is a bowl team we're looking at? Obviously, last year, a couple years, they've been around 5-7. The first year's with Tom Allen. This is year three. They look more like a bowl team to you?
You know, that's why I call them interesting, and I don't. That genuinely, that's not damning of a faint praise. I said they go 5-7 in the preseason, and for all the kind of their pronouncements, and even watching them in fall camp, I was a little bit skeptical of some of the ways in which they felt that they'd improved. Watching them through these first 2 weeks, I find this team much more intriguing than some of the IU teams I've covered in the recent past, and that includes some bowl teams, in terms of what this team might become, what this team can become, you know, the potential that this team has long term. And so, you know, are they a bowl team? I mean, number one, you're going to need Michael Penix's best all season. And I don't know, and this is genuine speculation from me, I don't know if that leads you to a place where this weekend you're overly reserved about Penix, you know, with the injury, because you just sort of feel like, listen, one Saturday against Ohio State in a game that we're probably a two-touchdown or more underdog in, we can't sacrifice the rest of the season just for that. But one way or the other, I think Indiana needs Penix at his best, or something close to his best, for as much of the season as possible for that to happen. I do think that with the way the schedule lays out, this is going to have to be a year where Indiana picks up one of those wins, whether it's maybe winning at Michigan State. I'm not saying that's going to be easy. I'm just saying I think they may have to do it. You know, one of those wins against the Big Four in the East to get to 6 wins. Maybe Michigan at home on Senior Day. That game is a weird one. It's for Michigan. It's wedged between Michigan State and Ohio State, so it's kind of the ultimate trap game, but you have no idea what either of these teams is going to look like by the time we get to that point in the season. I think it's possible. In fact, I would say that I'm less skeptical about Indiana's bowl potential after a couple of weeks against admittedly weak opposition than I was coming into the season, knowing that Indiana was probably going to start 2-0, and that it was probably going to be a fairly comfortable 2-0, regardless of where Indiana sat. But I don't think, I wouldn't sit here and guarantee any of that, certainly. I think it's still something where Indiana's got a fair bit left to prove before we can say, yeah, this team deserves to go to a bowl. I just think it's maybe a little bit more possible than I probably thought I did at one time.
They didn't get a lot of breaks through the Big Ten schedule makers. Their crossover games aren't all that forgiving. You don't get Illinois, and you have to play at Nebraska and play Northwestern.
Yeah, probably doesn't help. And you got to go to Purdue. You know, I mean, it's one of those where you certainly look at it and you say, well, that's a tough schedule to have to play. But it also feels like you say that every year about Indiana, and I don't say that flippantly. I mean, I find myself when I have these conversations trying to make it clear that I'm not trying to make jokes. I'm not trying to make light of Indiana. I'm not trying to make fun of Indiana. I've just been around for so long. This program, the margin for error is so thin. And you say, you're right. I mean, listen, this is one of those years where Indiana's only got 4 home games. It's a year where I could make a pretty convincing argument for you that if you had Michigan State or Penn State at home, instead of on the road, you'd probably have a better shot at beating one of those teams, but you don't. This is a year where you get Ohio State and Michigan at home, and you have to go to Michigan State and Penn State on the road. You know, this is Indiana's first trip to Nebraska. You'd probably favor Indiana a little bit more if that Purdue game was at home. You know, you can kind of go on and on and on. but it feels like Indiana fans have to do that every season. And so it kind of comes to a point where it says, well, if you have to do that every season, or almost every season, then aren't you, you know, doesn't that speak to just the wider sort of ceiling that you are butting your head up against? That if you look at it and you say the schedule just needs to lay out almost perfectly for Indiana annually to have a shot at the postseason, and maybe it's fair to at least say have a shot at something more than just squeezing out 6-6, 7-5, maybe even 8-4, maybe a New Year's Day game, something like that, then I think that speaks just to the broader reality of Indiana football, which is that this is a really difficult place to win. I'm not saying it can't be done, but it is a tough job, and it's made tougher by the fact that you're playing in the most lopsided division in college football, and that there's really no end in sight for that. So believe me when I say you're right about the schedule, but I've probably had that conversation. I mean, I've covered IU football in some form for, I guess, 7 years now, and I would bet you that we have a conversation like that at least 5 of those 7 years. It's just part of what Indiana butts up against all the time.
You mentioned the lopsided division. It was interesting to me at Big Ten Media Days, kind of going back a few months here, with all the chatter about divisional realignment, that Tom Allen seemed the one who would benefit the most if they were ever to realign the divisions, and he was probably the most pessimistic, I felt like, of all the coaches about it.
I mean, I just don't think Allen is... And I'm not trying to make him out to be a martyr or anything. I just don't think that Tom Allen is someone who is ever going to ask or expect other people to fight his battles for him, if that makes sense. I mean, Indiana's tried to make the best out of being in the East. I think that they've got a good, maybe not great, but good record against Rutgers and Maryland over the last few years. I know that they use being in the East as a recruiting tool. When they go to players, they say, you know, do you want to be going to Champaign and Minneapolis every year? Or do you want the opportunity every season to either play in the Big House and Ohio Stadium, or, I don't know, Spartan Stadium is quite, you know, the same level of sell, but, or Happy Valley, and you're going to Penn State. Like, you may not, if you can't go to those schools, at the very least, you're going to be playing in those stadiums, in those environments. You're going to have those opportunities every single year. So I think Indiana's tried to embrace it. I think Indiana probably also, I don't think anybody would ever say this out loud, I think Indiana probably also recognizes its level of political power when it comes to football in the Big Ten. It's just never going to be that big. So make the most of what you have. If you want my personal opinion, I think the divisions are hurting the Big Ten. I think that when you have such a power imbalance that there is just absolutely no sort of representation from the other side, then what winds up happening is basically you wind up hoping that one team can make it out of the East without getting too bloodied by having to play the other three teams in the East plus whatever crossover games they're handed, and then go to Indianapolis and win, and hope that that's a year where they also play a strong enough non-conference schedule and win all their non-conference games, such that you can make a strong argument for them come playoff selection time. And I know that people have come back at me and they've said, well, there have been times when the teams that came to Indianapolis out of the West, if they'd won the Big Ten championship game, might have wound up in the playoff. Looked like they would have. Wisconsin, I think, 1 year. Iowa, I believe, 1 year. But my answer is, but they didn't. You know, the West has never won a Big Ten title game, at least. Check me on that, but I'm almost positive.
I think that's correct.
And certainly, there's never been a time when one of those teams that maybe looked like a potential playoff team out of the West came in, won it, and gave the Big Ten some level of balance. And even beyond that, those teams have also always been one-offs. It's not like you see a top 10 Iowa team in Indianapolis every year, or a top 10 Wisconsin team in Indianapolis every year. That's never been sustained. And so there's never been a sustained sort of counterbalance in the Big Ten to just all of the heavyweights in the East. And I just don't think that's healthy. I did a story last year about kind of Indiana butting up against this, and I look back at like the previous 30-something years, I think maybe in 34 years. And in those 34 years, the SEC had split its titles 18-16 between the West and the East. And the Big Ten, meanwhile, I think it had a team that is now in the East win at least a share of a Big Ten title something like 27 out of 34 times. And I know that that's not a perfectly congruous comparison because the SEC's had a championship game for a long time and all that. But that imbalance, I think, just really hurts the Big Ten. I genuinely just think it does. Obviously, it's a problem for Maryland, Rutgers, and Indiana. I don't know that if you magically realign the division, Indiana would suddenly start winning 7 or 8 games a year. I think Indiana would still have a lot of the same challenges. I just think from a Big Ten's perspective, it's not healthy.
I guess the counterpoint would be if Nebraska ever got like 90s vintage Nebraska again.
Yeah, or if Wisconsin got back to a level of, you know, sort of consistent competitiveness that it reached under Barry Alvarez and Brett Bielema, then you'd say that as well. But they haven't. And, you know, more than that, I would say that they're, I mean, listen, I picked Nebraska to win the Big Ten title game this year. I don't know if I feel great about that pick after last week, but it seems like there's some promising signs in Lincoln. But there's also reasons to believe that Nebraska may just never be the program that it was, between its recruiting disadvantages and some of the things that have changed about the landscape of college football, offenses and things like that. The point is, it doesn't look like anything's imminent in that regard. It doesn't look like there is a team out in the West that is just an undeniable rising force between their momentum, their recruiting, the talent they've got on roster, the trajectory of their program. And so it's oversimplifying it, but I think if you just cut it north and south and you just protected the Michigan-Ohio State game and the Michigan State-Penn State game, I think you would have a healthier division of, you know, talent and success and potential, you know, program to program annually than what you have now. But I also understand the Big Ten's point in fairness, which is that we tried that, and you all made fun of us for what we call the divisions. You know, you all just made endless jokes about the legends and leaders divisions, and so we got rid of that and just went to the East and the West. That was an attempt to be more, you know, competitively balanced, and you all kind of scoffed at it. So I recognize there's no perfect solution to this. Again, I'm not among those that believe that if Indiana was, I think Indiana's lot would be different if Indiana was in the West and Purdue was in the East. I don't necessarily think that if Indiana was suddenly put into, let's call it the Big Ten South, with Maryland, Rutgers, Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, and, you know, somebody else, maybe like Illinois, that Indiana would suddenly start reeling off 8 wins a season. But I just think that from a wider Big Ten perspective, I think it would be better for the Big Ten if the sort of established dynasty-type programs were separated a little bit more.
You mentioned, sure, our research is on the up here. All five division winners have been from the East. You have to go back to the Legends Division, Michigan State in 2013, when a non-East team won it, although they are now in the East. But then you have to go back to 2012 when Nebraska beat Wisconsin. They were repping the Legends Division there. We'll kind of conclude on this note. Your prediction will be in the Dispatch, but this won't be a prediction, I guess, as much as if IU does pull a shocking upset or anything like that, and ends up, or it even ends up being a 3-point game and Ohio State wins, what does an Indiana upset bid look like? Is there a template for that? What kind of things should Ohio State be on guard for? Because last couple of years they've had trouble against kind of middle of the road Big Ten teams. At Iowa, tripped them up in 17, and Purdue was a letdown game last year, and so there's some concern about whether that happens or not this year. If the Hoosiers do make an attempt here, what do you kind of picture that looking like?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to answer that because it feels like there's almost two answers. Michael Penix plays. It's a very, very good game for Michael Penix. I think it's a high-scoring game either way. I don't see a world where Indiana wins without a bunch of mistakes, and it doesn't seem like we're going to have maybe a weird weather game that could lead to something like that. I don't see a world where Indiana wins like 26-21. I think that Indiana, if it was going to win or even push Ohio State to the brink, would probably have to be scoring somewhere upwards of 32, 35 points. I think Indiana's got to create some turnovers. That's something Indiana's been really good at the last 2 or 3 years. Not yet this season. I think they've only got one forced takeaway this season, sort of game-sealing interception against Ball State. Indiana gets after Justin Fields a little bit, and that's a lot easier said than done, but the pass rush and generally Indiana's ability to kind of penetrate the line of scrimmage has been better maybe than I expected it to be this early in the year against these first two kind of, you know, lower-level opponents, if you want to say. And Indiana's depth has got to show out. If Peyton Ramsey's a starter, then I think you need Ramsey to just be hyper-efficient. You need Ramsey to be what he is. And I think that this offense was going to be more explosive regardless. Even if Ramsey was the quarterback, I think Indiana was still going to be able to push the ball downfield more often. But Ramsey doesn't have the arm strength Penix has. I don't think you want Peyton Ramsey out there trying to throw 45, 50-yard passes. I think you want Peyton Ramsey to be the best version of Peyton Ramsey, a guy that is steady, a guy that is dependable, a guy that at the moment is the most accurate quarterback in Indiana history in terms of his completion percentage, and really leverage that as much as possible and limit his mistakes, get the run game going a little bit more. I think that's important regardless of who the quarterback is, because if Penix does play through an injury, you can't be asking him to drop back 45 times in a game. I just don't think that's a good idea at all. So if it's Michael Penix, it's the explosive plays, and it's the ability to push the ball downfield, go over the top, and really create some pressure and some uncomfortability, if that's a word, with Ohio State secondary. If it's Ramsey, the ability to be hyper-efficient in that offense, in Kalen DeBoer's offense, not make mistakes, and maybe control the clock a little bit more than a Penix-led offense would try to, because you don't feel like you can go for those home runs quite as often. So I think there's almost kind of two answers, like I said, because you don't know which guy's going to start at quarterback. But I think that certainly a lot of it's going to come down to if Indiana can make some big plays defensively, because I don't think they're going to hold Ohio State to 290 total yards offense or anything like that. Make some big plays defensively, last against Ohio State, stay fresh, you know, stay deep, and just be able to make those two or three kind of game-changing plays that it seems like Indiana always manages to kind of, you know, maybe get a fingertip to, but not quite pull in, literally and metaphorically, in these games. I do think that Indiana is, I think that they're closer to winning one of these games than they've been in a long time. I just don't know if it's Saturday, especially if Penix is out.
Well, if there is a template of beating Ohio State or upsetting Ohio State, it's certainly been some of those big plays. Sometimes it doesn't always work out with these podcasts. Sometimes I feel like you record right before an injury happens, so I'm glad we were able to give both sides of the coin, whether Indiana starts Michael Penix or Peyton Ramsey. So, Zach, we appreciated your insight. Thank you for hopping on and kind of giving people the lowdown on what to expect from the Hoosiers on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Zach for coming on. It's always helpful to hear kind of insight from the other team. We can glance at the stat pages and watch some highlights and maybe DVR an Indiana game, but we're obviously not around the program as well as the other beat writers are, so that always helps give a full picture of the upcoming game. You'll hear another word from our sponsor. We have to pay the bills.
Hey, football fans. Leave the Hail Marys for the game and go for a sure thing when it comes to satisfying your craving. When you pick up Raising Cane's for game day, all you have to worry about is the score, because we've got the food covered. With hand-battered, cooked-to-order, always fresh, never ever frozen chicken fingers, craveable cane sauce, and jugs of freshly made tea and lemonade. Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. One love.
If you like our podcasts, you like listening to the Buckeye Extra Football Podcast, drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the word out. We want to be a 5-star podcast. Blue chip podcast, not a 3-star, even with 5 stars. Thank you for listening. This is Joey Coffin from the Columbus Dispatch. The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company, and Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra Podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.